Melnick in the afternoon. TSN 690.
Nathan Beaulieu at the point, trying to sift it through, hit right in the turn, the shot. Kicked aside by Walker. Grant scores! O'Toole, lock it in! Mark Starr is a good player. This is not a good play. And a terrific play by Zibanejad. Starting back with Fast. Mika Zibanejad through. Fast scores! Short-handed goal! And the Rangers have tied it. Loose and Lekkonen able to feed the point. Markov into the slot. Gallagher's got room. Shoots, scores! Seconds later.
That's the way to respond to a shorthanded goal.
Got it to Nash. To the net. Rebound. Scores. And the Rangers have tied it. Brady Shea. And the puck sent to center. Kreider's on it. You're right. This is the best we've seen from Kreider. In front. Scores. It's a game winner for Mika Zibanejad. Rangers win 3-2 and lead the series 3-2.
You know, everybody's going to fly to New York tomorrow and recover, and they're going to put a game plan together, and we're going to put a game plan together, and both teams are going to do what they've been doing for five games, is they're going to compete real hard. That's what I expect from us, and that's what I expect from them.
To get through this, we're going to need more from a lot of guys. You know, I think it's going to be time for everybody to certain players to elevate their game and you know, have that confidence and that desire to be better. There's no doubt when you lose games and you're behind 3-2, you can't be satisfied as a team. And there's certain players we all know that can certainly give us a little bit more, and then hopefully that's going to happen.
Chris Cuthbert and Pierre Maguire in the Bell Center last night at NBC. Again, the full NBC network will have that Game 6 tomorrow night in primetime at 8 p.m. with Pierre, Doc Emrick, and Eddie Olczyk. Tonight, Pierre is in Washington for the Capitals Maple Leaf Series.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Dagwood's Bab Sandwich. Ham and pepperoni dressed like you like it. Now only $7 for a large at Dagwood's.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
Hello from sweltering Washington, D.C.
Oh, really? Heat wave.
Humid. Mm. Very humid.
Maybe the ice slows down.
They got the building. I don't know. That's what I'm concerned about. I'm right at ice level right now. That's, I guess, the point of my reference to the weather. If the ice slows down, I think advantage Washington.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Pierre, you got your I was anxious to talk to you about this. Thank you, by the way. Pierre did deliver on his All-Star Game ticket for me, and appreciate it very much. Beautiful-looking memento. But this was your first up-close and personal look at the Canadiens and Rangers series. You can imagine what the tone is like in this city. Let me start with a positive. Okay. What did you make of Arturi Lehkonen?
Fantastic. Really impressed. Really excited for him. You know, what's interesting about him, he's a Finn that spent the last 2 years playing in Sweden and for Frölunda, the same team that, you know, Henrik Lundqvist really helped make famous. So it's interesting to watch him go against Lundqvist because I'm sure he's aware of all the different things that Lundqvist has done in his career, including 2005 winning the Swedish championship on a real good team during a lockout season. So, I mean, for Lehkonen to play that way and that well against a guy whose legend he's very familiar with is really impressive, number one. Number two, the fans in Montreal, off the charts good. Listen, I'm in a lot of buildings, as you know, during the playoffs every year. That's electrifying there. They're all good. Don't get me wrong. They're all really good. There's just a notch up there in Montreal. It's just a notch up, that's all.
And they certainly fed off it and helped create that, help it going, get going. But then their inability, I guess, to score that third goal. They had opportunities to score a third goal, give themselves a two-goal lead, which under Claude Julien has been enough, and give the Rangers credit. Why are they so good on the road, Pierre?
I still say, and I used tape of this before the game, most of your listeners didn't see our broadcast just because they can't get it through legal means. But the tape that I built was the center ice position of the Rangers and how much bigger they are and more robust. They might not be better players, but they're bigger. And you could see the effectiveness of Oscar Lindberg, even though he got hurt in the game, he came back and played. You can see the effect of Kevin Hayes. You can see the effect of Mika Zibanejad last night in particular. You can see Derek Stepan when he's with Rick Nash throwing penalties. Their center ice play is bigger and better than Montreal's. And that's one of the reasons why I think they are able to survive on the road, because they can stabilize a lot easier in their own zone with their center icemen because they're so big. And even if they don't, Hayes didn't have a great game last night, but he was still an effective player. Zibanejad had probably his best game as a New York Ranger last night. Oscar Lindbergh was excellent, and Stepan was quietly so reliable. So, I mean, while maybe some of the guys weren't hitting home runs, that's where I think the separation point, that's the point I made before the game. I thought that would be the difference in the game last night, and I think eventually it did become the difference.
All right, so you heard what Claude Julien had to say, kind of similar to what Alain Vigneault had to say after he lost on home ice at MSG, and his players did respond. Chris Kreider finally showed up for the series last night. You mentioned Zibanejad was basically a no-show. Now it's the Canadiens' turn.
Well, Kreider was good after the second period. He was not good, and he'd be the first person to tell you the first 40 minutes of that game, he was non-existent. And I think there was one sequence that got him going. Zuccarello made a really strong play on the left-wing side in his third period, and he chipped the puck to Kreider, and that created a foot race situation with Petrie. Carey Price made the save, but it was really the first time we saw the explosive potential of Kreider,
right.
And he seemed to surge after that. And I brought that up during our broadcast. I said the Canes better be aware of Kreider, and you could hear Cuthbert on the soundbite saying, you just talked about Kreider, because you could see it. You could feel it, you could sense it, that he was about to get going, and he did. Now, I don't know if he can sustain that or not, because he's been a conundrum for him this playoff season. He was great during the regular year, 28 goals. He's got to be better, more consistent. But, you know, Mitch, you asked, and I'm sorry to be long-winded on this,
sorry.
But I just got passion for that series. I think the series is awesome to watch, and I'm so excited to do the game tomorrow. The thing to me, for Montreal, Max had chances. Max had chances. Now they got to get to the back of the net. You know, Galchenyuk got to want to dominate the puck more. Has to want to dominate. Don't discourage him. Encourage him to dominate the puck. Go get the puck and dominate the darn thing. I mean, that's what I'd be telling some of these guys. There's certain Gallagher can't play any better than what he's doing. He can't. He let Brady Shea go. That's a defensive zone mistake that happens. He was trying to be over-aggressive. But outside of that, he can't play any better. Plekanec, I don't think, can play much better at his age, what he's doing right now. There are a lot of guys playing pretty damn well for Montreal. They really are.
Yeah, and a series that is so tight. You can't help, and I know the players themselves may feel it's unfair. You know how much heat Pacioretty is taking, not just here. I mean, he's taking it all over the hockey world who are paying attention to this series. He's got to score. Their top two goal scorers are Max Pacioretty and Alex Galchenyuk, and neither one has hit the back of the net yet.
That's why I said those were the two names, right, that I mentioned to you. And I would be really positive with both of them. I really would. I wouldn't want to break Max's spirit now. It's just not the time. You know, you can have once the series is over, whether you win or lose, if you're getting ready for the next series, then you got to challenge him a little bit. But if you lose, then you got to really challenge him for the offseason and how he wants to be perceived as a player. How do you want to be perceived as a captain of the Montreal Canadiens? But I'd be really positive with him right now.
Well,
I don't think it's from a lack of effort. I really, truly don't believe it's from a lack of effort.
Oh, no, no. There was no lack of effort.
I mean, the effort's there.
There was no lack of effort last night. He had the opportunities. He didn't finish. He got beat by Lundqvist.
Right.
He's doing that to almost everybody. But in order for the Canadiens, and Radulov didn't have a good game either compared to what we've seen since the series started. Pierre, would you put the three of them together?
Yes. I want Galchenyuk, Radulov, and Pacioretty together. I want them together for a simple reason. I'm going on the road. I want to challenge the Rangers. If they want to play Girardi and McDonough against my guys, you know, especially Radulov and Pacioretty, I want to challenge those guys, and I'll find creative ways. If I'm Claude Julien, I'm going to find creative ways to double shift my top guys, and then I'm going to try to break down McDonough and Girardi by double shifting. There's ways of doing it. I've witnessed it. I've been part of it. But that's what I would try. You know, you want a game plan. You heard Vigneault talk about everybody's going to drop their game plan to get ready. That's part of it, managing your assets. So I'd like to see those three guys together.
We're going into a situation here where we're going to learn a lot about our group. We're going to learn, you know, what type of character we have. I think, you know, if you don't have character, this is the time where you're going to doubt yourself. If you have character, this is the time where the belief is going to come out of your group.
I have no doubt they're going to show up and give it everything they got in Game 6 tomorrow night. But, Pierre, there are a lot of people who see the way the game played out the almost total domination by the Rangers towards the end, and especially in overtime, much like what the Canadiens did to them in game two. Does that carry over?
It will a little bit. But if the Canadiens get off to a good start, a flying start, then that goes away pretty fast. Here's something to remember. The Canadiens lost that game based on their third period play and their overtime play. So what happened? That's the question you have to ask. And I think what happened was they were so quick, they were so hard on it, they were so tenacious through 40 that I don't know how much they had left in the tank. And they were relying on a bunch of guys, not the whole group. They were relying on more of a smaller sample size from some of the guys. And that's where you get into the fatigue factor. And the Rangers, for whatever reason, sensed the urgency of the situation. But here's why they were allowed to do that. Because Henrik Lundqvist kept them in the game. And you can't let that happen in the potential knockout game, which is game six. You can't let that happen. When you get chances to score, and I know it sounds so easy to say it, and it is easy to say it, but you got to finish. When you get chances on this guy, you have to finish because you're not going to get a ton of them. Not in a closeout game. You're not going to get a ton of chances.
Just think back to game six 3 years ago. There was maybe one legitimate scoring chance on him in home ice.
That's right.
Pierre, here's what Henrik Lundqvist had to say after the game and what he had to say just as his team went out on the ice for overtime.
We played really well in overtime. We didn't wait for something to happen. That was my last word going out. Let's not wait for something to happen. Let's go out and take charge, and that's exactly what guys did. It felt like we had them on their heels all that time.
They sure did. The Rangers were absolutely flying.
You know what's amazing? He really did say that. That's where I have to work, in the Rangers hallway.
Right.
So I heard everything that they said going out on the ice. The players are all saying, "Hanky, Hanky, close the door." And there's this calm voice in Lundqvist just saying, "Okay, fellas, let's not let them take it to us. Let's take it to them." That's what he said. I'm sitting there listening to that tape, and I'm going, "You hear that? I heard that voice just before they went out."
Pierre McGuire in the building last night again in Washington. We'll continue with Rod and Gallo, but first, an opportunity. If there's a Game 7 to win tickets to Game 7, you got to be listening to Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, Rick Moffitt on Monday morning at 8:05, because Rod is going to hit the clue word right now, and if you hear it, the opportunity, the cue to call on Monday morning at 8:05, you can win the tickets to Game 7.
Negativity.
You want to hit that one more time?
Yeah.
Negativity.
Okay, I think we got that. That was definitely Max.
What was that?
Yeah, I can imagine, but most people should get it.
Okay.
All right.
Definitely. Now, the Shea goal was such a significant moment last night, Pierre. In the final 5 minutes of play, do coaches treat those time periods as more significant? And what can they do to try and prevent a situation like that for Montreal when Shea scored?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. The truth of the matter is you do pay attention. You're reminding guys about the time on the clock, at least the good teams that I've been around. You're always reminding them about the time on the clock, chip it in, chip it out. Pay attention to your face-off assignments. Subtle little reminders. You don't want them panicking, but you do remind them all the time of the different things that are going on. And you do pay attention, especially in matchup situations. That's just a blown-in zone coverage. You know, and again, Brendan was trying to be over-aggressive. I think everybody knows that, and he got caught on the wrong side of the ice. And people, I think, are probably blaming Shea Weber on that. But if you watch the tape, that's not Shea Weber's guy. That's not anywhere close to Shea Weber's guy. Shea Weber's got to help his partner who got hung out to dry when Nash drives the net. VC made a heck of a play on the strong side boards to keep that play alive and get it down to Nash. And then Nash, obviously, with the power move.
How do the Canadiens counter what the Rangers have obviously done with Nash and a few of their other forwards, taking the puck out from the corner of the rink?
Yeah, you're going to have to close a gap on them. You know, the Canadiens really worked on it ever since Claude got there on their in-zone coverage below the hash marks. We talked about it a lot. And I remember telling you the one thing the opposition is going to try to do when they play that kind of system, they're going to get the puck back to the point and create point shot opportunities.
Yep.
The Canadiens have kind of adjusted to that. They've gotten better at taking away point shots. But when they've done that, they haven't really done a great job protecting down low from the hash mark to the icing line. And that's something they're going to have to get better at. And one of the things you just stress on that in a meeting more than anything else.
He's strong defensively. He obviously, we see his offensive skill, especially last night with reading the play real well and getting that goal. It's a big goal for us. So I'm really impressed with him. I think he's strong on both sides of the ice. And That's what you look for in a D-man.
Pierre, the teams are obviously very, very close, but a couple of noticeable differences. That's Brendan Smith and his partner Brady Shea, talking about Brady Shea, yeah. Their third defense pair. It's been a no contest compared to Beaulieu and Yamalin last night and Nesterov to start. And the fourth lines, the Rangers' fourth line has produced, the Habs haven't.
Yeah. It's what we talked about pretty much before the series. But that doesn't mean that the Canes can't reverse field on it. You just have to be aware of it. Oscar Lindbergh's been a tremendous player in this series, as has Jesper Foss. And in game one, obviously, Tanner Glass was outstanding, and they've decided to go with more of a quick lineup, so they've taken Tanner out of the lineup. But the one thing about Brady Shea, if you watched him play in high school at Lakeville North of Minnesota, or you watched him play at the University of Minnesota, or you watched him in the American League last year, he is a big body, but he is a big body that can fly. He can. Colton Parayko in St. Louis, and Brady Shea, for their size, are probably two of the better skaters in the league for men that big. They're just powerhouse skaters, and that makes them very difficult to play against. Brady's just scratching the surface, by the way. He and Jimmy Vesey are roommates. They got an apartment together in Tribeca, and they push each other so hard. But Brady Shea and Jimmy, they're both just scratching the surface. They're both going to be elite NHL players.
Jimmy Vesey, in addition to the talent and the skating, that's obvious, he's in your face, isn't he? I mean, for a kid who hasn't played in the NHL before?
He's a tough kid. You know, his father was a heck of a player. I don't know if you know this, Mitch. His dad played at Merrimack College for a guy named Ron Anderson. Ronnie was an awesome player to be. The only reason I know this is because I coached against those guys in a lot of playoff games in college. Jimmy's dad was drafted by St. Louis. He was a really, really good player. He scouts for Toronto now.
He's
in the Boston area.
He's one of Chris Nyland's best friends, and he's semi-regular on off the cuff.
He was a heck of a player, I'm telling you. He was a heck of a player. And he comes from a tough side of town. Chris could tell you that, too. So Jimmy's not a shrinking violet. I think I told you this last year. I went to go watch Harvard practice a lot because they just, for whatever reason, was in Boston a lot last year. And I saw Jimmy practice a lot. I saw, you know, that Harvard team coached by Teddy DiNardo. And the thing that stood out to me about Jimmy, for a college player, he practiced like a pro. You know, pro players pay attention to tape-to-tape passes. Pro players pay attention to release points on shots. Pro players pay attention to their two-step acceleration. You know, when you go watch regular teams practice, they don't always have guys that do that. Jimmy Vesey always did that. His practice habits and his willingness to sacrifice and be perfect, just awesome. Really, really good.
Pierre, you know, Marc Bergevin always talks about character, and that was a big topic in the summer when he made some of the trades that he made. Going into this elimination game, I know there's a lot of focus on Pacioretty, and we spoke about him already. But what kind of difference do you think the acquisitions of Weber, Shaw, King, guys who have played in big games, in an elimination game, what kind of effect can those guys have on the rest of the team?
I think that'll help a lot. By the way, I had a really good visit with Steve Ott. He just loves and is so proud to be a member of the Montreal Canadiens. Same thing with Shea Weber. Talked to Andrew, actually, before he went out of the tunnel for warm-up. He wants to do more. He's really a proud guy. He says, I got to do more. He's telling me that. I said, you're okay. You're fine. I'm watching every game in the series. You don't need to do that much more. I mean, you got to play your role. It's been created for you. So these guys care. I think guys like that can make a big difference when you go into a potential knockout game, especially on the road.
Major disappointment across the board. I mean, I don't think in any of the four games we had a stretch in the second period where it felt like we might have been competing to the level that's needed in the playoffs. And then
there is a part of Joel Quenneville's post-series post-mortem at the podium, a shocking sweep to the Predators. How deep can Nashville go here?
Very deep. The problem's going to be if St. Louis gets through Minnesota, that could happen obviously tomorrow or potentially on Monday. People don't know enough about it. The St. Louis-Nashville thing is like a tong war. They hate each other. They have for a long time. It's as nasty as any rivalry series in the league. Just not enough people know about it. Unless you live in Nashville or St. Louis, you wouldn't know about it. So they could. What would happen, though, if St. Louis turned it into a battle of attrition, and let's just say whether it be a Pietrangelo or Bouwmeester or Parayko or Edmondson couldn't play at 100%, that'd be a big problem for St. Louis. And if on the other side of Subban or Ekblom or Roman Josi or Ryan Ellis couldn't play at 100%, that would be a problem for Nashville. So that going into that series, that would be the game planning element. You try to really do some damage to one of the top four defensemen on the opposition team.
David Desharnais, he'll swing it to the corner for Draisaitl. Back in front, Desharnais. Shot!
How about that late last night in Edmonton, huh? Tying it late with the Klefbom shot and then winning it in overtime, another one-sided overtime against San Jose. The Sharks were this close to taking it back home to clinch, and now they got a win.
It begs the question of a veteran team, and I'm sure they're probably asked themselves on the plane today going back to San Jose, why do we sit back? You know, what were we doing? We were really in a comfort zone. We were playing well. We were pushing the pace. We were attacking their goal. They were causing problems for their end zone coverage. They scored some spectacular goals, talking about San Jose, but they sat back, and it's a good lesson. Don't do that. Now, do I think Edmonton can go into the Shark Tank and win like they did in Game 3? Probably not. I think you're looking at 7 in that series.
All right, what kind of feel do you have with Washington taking it home, now a best of 3 starting tonight?
Just before I came on, I visited with both coaching staffs in their respective offices. The Washington guys feel really good. They do. They feel very, very comfortable coming back here. They think that every single game they continue to uptick in terms of playing better. Babcock and his staff, they're really comfy. They're excited. They really are. Now, I think they know it's going to be a little tougher here than maybe it was in game one or two, but they're not intimidated by the theater. I was really surprised. Where I work in Washington is right in the same hallway where the Maple Leafs change and they work. And you hear it. And, you know, usually with teams that are intimidated, there's a quiet, there's like a pall around their group. Not so much with this group. There's an energy around Toronto. It's got a chance to be a good game. I still think going into game 6, Toronto will be facing elimination. That's what I think. I don't know that, obviously, but that's what I think.
So from Montreal, we'll leave out the first part of it. Montreal, Washington, New York City, game 6, primetime, NBC, the Montreal Canadiens and New York Rangers tomorrow night. What would you expect tomorrow night on the big show?
Montreal's got to really come out flying. They cannot chase the game. They have to get the lead. They have to force the Rangers to open up. And when the Rangers open up, it makes it an easier game for the smaller Montreal skilled players. Not saying the big players, the skilled players in Montreal. I really would like to see Galchenyuk go out and dominate the puck. And if he can do that, I think it can make them better. But that's, I would make it a simple game plan, but I would put a high emphasis on making sure we get the lead. I would, on offensive zone faceoffs, I would load up with offensive players. Defensive zone faceoffs, I'd make sure I have 2 center icemen on the ice in case somebody gets thrown out. I would pay attention to the 2 zones, the offensive and defensive zone, for all little situations. That's how I would try to manage the game as a coach.